please be advised that this show isn't for the weak-hearted. This show may contain coarse language, violence, also alcohol and drug use, cryptoids and crime, not for children under 14, rated R. Listener discretion is advised. From your Creepaholic Studios, now here's your host, Shanice.
And we are back, everybody. Thank you so much for everybody returning for my podcast. I actually have a few shout-outs to do this morning. So I'd like to give a shout-out to BeccaMind630, another shout-out to Anthony, one more to Angel Wings, and the last one goes out to Tiffany. Thank you so much for your support for my podcast and following my channel. I really appreciate it. I have followed all of you back as well. So I hope maybe in the future we can all connect a little more. So anyways, today's show is actually a little bit of a sad show. It is a show about a child murder. So, unfortunately, if that is something that you can't handle, please just skip on to the next episode when it does come out. Because I don't want to, you know, make anyone feel like they're sad. That's something I don't want to do. I specifically do these cases for people to learn a little bit more about how cruel people can actually be. But anyways, today's episode is going to start off a little bit new. We're going to start off with our menacing news alert. So, today we are going to be doing some of the 10 dumbest criminals. So, our first one up that we got is going to be called Tricked in the USA, the Charm of the Old Lady. A thief was caught in the act in Iowa when he broke into a house of a 93-year-old Ruth Bradshaw. She knew immediately that she could not overpower him. With physical strength, but only with brains, the old lady put the villain literally on the cross. She pretended to have recognized the friend of his son. Miss Bradshaw, whoever wrote this obviously didn't write it good. Anyways, Miss Bradshaw served the intruder a rich breakfast and suggested him afterwards to rest for a little while with her. The burglar took so much attention to the nice gesture that the police had to wake him up off the sofa. What a clever grandma. So the next one that I have for you is called Brainless Station Riders in Canada. As particularly disoriented proved two robbers from Edmonton, Canada. The two raided a gas station in Vancouver in September 1981. They tied the gas station attendant and fled with their loot in the cart. On the run, they got lost and decided to ask for directions at a gas station. What they did not notice was it was the same gas station they had just mugged. So, by the time the attendant left, the two were arrested. What idiots. And I got one more for you. So, this one's called Knave Drug Dealer from Poland. A 23-year-old drug dealer wanted to get caught, at least it looks like it, at the border crossing in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern. That is a long word, and I probably spelled that wrong, said that wrong, and I'm very sorry. Put this young man questioned to German officials. He wanted to know whether an old warrant against him from the North Rhine-Westphalia, a German state, is still valid. In fact, it still was nationwide and not just in North Rhine-Westphalia. The border guards took the dealer fixed immediately. He now is serving a prison sentence for 1 year and 3 months. Wow, what an idiot. Well, that's all I really have for you today, so that was our menacing news alert. So why don't we get down to business here? So our case is called The Broken Princess, and it is the death of Mika Jordan. It is a very sad and emotional roller coaster case. I broke out in tears quite a few times during this case. It is not a very easy case to read through. So if I do start crying, I apologize to everybody, but there's some moments in here that is just gonna get ya. So this is a sad and horrific case for the parents of small children that are petrified by the acts of this case. A once beloved, bright-eyed and cheery 6-year-old girl named Mika Jordan would spend her cheery short childhood catching ladybugs and enjoying a Slurpee with her brother until one fateful night out of the blue, a 911 call would be made.
911 from what city?
Calgary.
Do you need fire? Please hit ambulance.
Ambulance. My daughter just fell down the stairs. And she's not there. She's not conscious.
Okay, I have help on the way. Just stay on the line. How old is she?
She's six.
Six? Is she awake?
No.
Pardon?
No.
No? Is she breathing?
No, I don't think so.
So what you just heard was the 911 call from Marie Magoon calling in about her stepdaughter, Mika Jordan. In the 911 call, Mika's stepmother would allegedly say she had fallen down the stairs, but it wouldn't be until police arrived at the scene and they would find injuries that would not indicate that she fell down the stairs. This poor child's hair was matted and missing pieces of her hair. Her tiny body was covered with bruises, and also second-degree burns covered her palms. She had also suffered abdominal injuries, with a laceration to her pancreas, and her liver was also torn. But that wouldn't be the worst of her injuries. Her head was the worst of all. Several blows had been struck towards this little girl's head. For Mika Jordan, the weekend of November 11th, 2011, began with her stepmom, Marie Magoon, would hold a lighter under her palms and burn them. To hide the burns from Mika's mother, Jordan and Magoon simply would not return Mika as per their custody agreement. Instead, over the next few days, they would violently abuse her by punching her, tripping her, smacking her head off a tile floor. Mika was also dragged up and down the stairs by her hair and was forced to run up and down the stairs as punishment. So it was on November 13th, 2011, when Jordan called 911 to report that she had fallen down the stairs. The paramedics arrived and found her unconscious and in a respiratory arrest state. Later, she would die in the hospital the next day. Mika did actually die from blunt force trauma to her skull. The police investigation was dubbed the Operation SASH, which was Safe and Sound in Heaven, and it involved 158 police officers. Soon the Mr. Big operation began a police post where they would pose as criminals and create an elaborate scenarios which were to draw out and aim out the suspects into criminal life. So in this case, that would be Magoon and Jordan. At this point, the couple was actually living in a van. When police began this operation in February 2012, from February to October is when the operation ended. Officers ran over 106 scenarios designed to convince Magoon and Jordan they were part of a criminal organization. Police also intercepted 17,534 private communications between the couple. So in the Mr. Big operation, undercover cops set up a couple in a rental property at a massive discount, I might add, that had a detached garage on the property, which was occupied by the undercover police officers pretending to run a criminal business involving credit card scam, skimming fraud, and drug trafficking. So after a while, Magoon and Jordan both developed friendships with the officers and was paid $15,000 with the promise of more work with the group. When the couple was told Jordan's arrest was imminent, they turned to their new crime family. Turn to the police. They don't know that, but I'm just laughing because they deserve this. They deserve everything they're going to get, and you're going to believe that too. So that's when they began to admit what they had done to Mika. Heartless fucking bastards, I'm telling you. Like, I can't even begin to describe how horrible these people are. So now more than a year after Mika's death, Magoon and Jordan were charged with first-degree murder. The Alberta Court of Appeals found the child was forcibly confined, which elevated the convictions to first-degree murder. Running down the stairs was what they said, the hallmark of the confinement of the case, and that was said by the appealed prosecutor Christine Rideout in her submissions. So they were originally convicted with second-degree murder, but their convictions were elevated to first-degree murder by the Alberta Court of Appeals in December 2016. So when they were charged with second-degree murder, the prosecutors had to work extra hard in order to overturn the conviction to first-degree murder. The the preliminary investigator that was assigned to the Micah Jordan's case was Calgary's police homicide detective Mike Calvella, and his team would have to work around the clock and try to lay the charges. But in the meantime, Jordan and Magoon would simply just move on with their lives. Heartless fucking people. So I'm going to talk a little bit about why, like, what they were doing during the time before they got arrested when Mr. Big was in play, and what was really going on with them. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what the two did. So before they got arrested, the couple didn't even waste time to stop to grieve the loss of their beloved Micah. Instead, the sinister two would just take it as a new beginning and also a new business opportunity, hence where Mr. Big's operation came into play. Soon they would have a social circle that would accept them, understand them as people, so the two would go on double dates and even spend nights out drinking and enjoying life. So I just want to take a minute and say, like, if those two wanted to be alone and do these things, like, why not just remove the child, renounce custody, send her back to her mother? Like, why the abuse? Why the murder of a poor, innocent, beloved 6-year-old child? I don't get it. So I want to explain to you a little bit about Mr. Big and what it is. So Mr. Big technically is the Mr. Big interrogation technique is an undercover policing confession procedure technique where the suspect is not cognitive that he is provided and self-incriminating evidence. So that's Smith Stinson 2010 page 39 and Holmgreen 27 page 148. This tactic has been subject to controversy. The risk in introducing false confessions and the deception aspect of the technique is found morally reprehensible by the members of the public. Now that's just a little bit of the assessment that was done on Mr. Big, and this was done by Channel J Blas, or Blas, it's B-L-A-I-S, I don't know, can't even tell you. So I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. So there's more if I kept reading, but we'd be here for days just listening to nonstop sections and codings of the penal code, which I'm sure we all do not want to listen to. So the undercover cop says that Spencer told him that he did not see Micah fall down the stairs, but he did in fact hear it. The officer then goes on to say that Jordan told him that when he didn't get a response to Micah when he called from Micah when he called out to her, he soon would then find her laying at the bottom of the stairs unconscious. He said he gave her CPR until the paramedics arrived. Jordan would still maintain that he had done nothing wrong to his daughter, so Jordan knew police were closing in and was likely to arrest him. Instead of being a good father and admitting that he actually did something wrong, instead he would turn to his fictitious fake boss, which was actually the police, as we all know. And that's where he admitted all the problems to try and make them go away. The officer says that Jordan was so emotional when he found out that Magoon was going to be arrested and that he may never see her again. So, like, where the fuck was that emotion and love and support for your own fucking child? Like, this bride who comes in and burns the fucking palms of your child's hand and you beat her too. And you guys think this is fun and hilarious? Like, oh my god, I wish I could just slap those two right now. They freaking piss me off. Like, I swear to god, they thought this was a fucking game. Like, this is a child. And the only thing he's worried about is losing his abusive girlfriend. Like, I don't even know what to say. So anyways, they're on trial for first degree murder for a series of injuries leading to Mika's death at Alberta's Children's Hospital on November 14th, 2011. The officers also said that when he asked Jordan if the police would find something in his garbage, that he would change his status and then get him charged. I didn't really know what that meant. That's all they really had on that. But Jordan then goes on to quote, "Won't be that stupid." Although upon saying this, the officer does tell Jordan's lawyer, Mitch Stephenson, he never really asked him to clarify but what he meant. So because he didn't clarify, I can't really tell you guys what that even meant, because apparently nobody knows. And I don't know what they were trying to find in his garbage. Like, he was living in a van, so how would he have a garbage? That I don't know. So going on with the undercover officer's questioning, Jordan's story had more inconsistencies with what the police had released to the media, and told him he had better tell the truth to his so-called crime boss. He agreed to do so. I just wanted to point out again that we're still talking about the police. They are the Mr. Big, which is the criminal organization. Just in case you have someone that's jumping into the story right now and they have no idea if we're talking about the chocolate bar or what we're talking about. So no, we're not talking about a chocolate bar. It's a police operations thing. So anyways, which is the crime organization that Jordan and Magoon work for. So the officer said Jordan then had told him after the interview with the crime boss known as Mr. Big scenario on October 7th, 2012, that he had just had an interview that he never wanted to happen. So after everything with Mr. Big's operation going on, it would take nearly a year after Mika's death for Jordan and Magoon to finally be arrested. So before I like get into everything here about the convictions and how everything went, I would really like you guys to listen to these tapes of what they said happened to Mika, to the police, on their own accounts. I am going to tell everybody these videos are very heartbreaking and they are very hard to listen to. So if you have children in the room that may not want to hear this, you probably do not want to let them hear this at all. So what we're going to listen to first is the raw, first we're going to listen to is the stepmom admits to abuse in the Mika Jordan case. So that was her admitting to beating Jordan and what she did to her. So I know it was a little bit choppy, but that's because it was body cam footage from a police officer. So what she initially said, and on the video, she grabs a pillow and she's shaking the pillow and showing what she's doing to the child. If go on YouTube and type in stepmom admits to abuse in Mika Jordan's case, and you need to see this for yourself. She's grabbing a pillow and shaking it up and down from the floor and telling her, why do you have to do this? Why do you, like, abusive bitch. So now we're going to listen to the father, which doesn't even, this is going to affect a lot of people. I'm telling you, I'm sorry. Again, I apologize. If this is something that is too traumatic for you, please skip on. I'm going to keep saying this because this was even heartbreaking for me. So now we're going to listen to Mika's father.
I remember the day before, me and my wife were fighting. The day before she fell down the stairs. Me and my wife were fighting, and, I ended up taking a little bit of anger out on my mother. No, I didn't hit her. More or less just pushed her. But I remember her, falling back on hard tile floors. And, she smoked her head pretty good. There. I thought I checked her later on. I thought she was fine. Probably should have checked her out a little bit better. comes the next day. The agent asks, sir, what? What day, sir? What week?
Saturday the 12th. This is when I pushed her and she hit her head really hard. The 13th is the day she fell downstairs and called 911. But that morning, we were talking about lying. Lying in our kids drive her nuts. They learned it from their mom. He's not her mom. Obviously, it's his stepmother.
Okay.
She learned the lying from her mom, and it drive me nuts. It drive me nuts to the point where it would make me mad. So I used to hit them the side of the head. I'm sure your dad.
Oh, I got feels.
Yeah, coughed on the back of the head. Used to do that a lot. I remember her being lucid, actually, that day. She wasn't herself. That's the only thing I can say. She's usually just happy-go-lucky, happy person. Just wasn't herself, but I was still angry. And, honestly, don't remember how it happened, but, I hit her. I hit her somewhere in the stomach area. And, she fell over, and she seemed okay again. But then, the rest of the day, it just seemed okay. Played with the kids, had a meal, all that, and then, sitting on the couch watching TV, and I heard her hit alone with the stairs. I turned around and asked if she was okay. She wouldn't respond to me. So I got up, but I asked again if she was okay. My response, I picked her up, brought her into her bathroom, which was right there. I thought she just knocked herself out cold. So I splashed some water in her face to try and knock her out of it. No, she wasn't breathing. So I took her out of the bathroom, and I started to do CPR on her. Mom told her to call 911. And that's my story.
Do you think Marie did that injuries?
When you came in, I said that hearing her voice unlocked something in my head. I remember, and I don't know what day it was, vague memory of her holding me to look this high off the ground. And just repeat it.
How was she holding her?
Like, just by her arms, like here, holding her up. I don't know from how high.
And where's this mom holding you? She's standing up.
And where is it? Stand up. What are you doing? Why are you on her? I don't know what you're saying. I don't know if that helps. It's only from whatever height, but I know it would have been upstairs in the tile.
So he was just explaining in very graphic details what abuse he did to his daughter and what his girlfriend and her stepmom did to her. Pretty horrific stuff. Now, the next and last one that I have for you is the raw interview of Marie Magoon. So, again, disclaimer, this is going to be hard. It's just showing a disclaimer saying this video is encrypted by an interview with the police.
It shows a number of people here, obviously. But, no, I mean, he saw them once a week, and that's all he was working on. As I was still going to see his kids every once in a while. He didn't really hear them out, or really spend their time on drugs and do anything. Maybe to miss him for kindergarten. Destroyed their lives.
Kyla did.
Oh yeah. I did everything for them. They call me mommy, they call her Kyla. And I'm not the one who forced that.
So you earned that title?
And I was the one there. I was the one that was there for me. And like I, as much as they want to claim that those were their kids, you know, she has a perfect path to grieving on television. I find that quite I honestly think that is attention grabbing and it's, it doesn't pay any respect to Mika. I think it's a whole act what she's doing. If Mika leave out with my children, I raised them in the past 2 years and I did all that. I'm the one who got Mika back on track in school. I'm the one who compromised everything of mine for them. As a child, that's what I've always wanted to do.
What?
Children are my passion. They've always been my passion.
Okay, so if children was your passion, then why would you beat her? Like, these two make no sense at all. They try to make it seem like they're loving and they care about her, but in the meantime, look at what they did. And they're talking about this like they did absolutely nothing wrong. Like, so anyways, let's get back to our story here. So, after the arrest and the conviction of the second-degree murder, the Crown had proven beyond reasonable doubt that Mika was confined and thus statutorily evaluated to first-degree murder. The Supreme Court upholds first-degree murder convictions for the killers of Michael Jordan on November 27, 2017, just past the 6th anniversary of Mika's death. Moments after the decision, Brian Woodhouse said he was surprised that the 9-member panel came up with the decision so quickly. Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin said the words appeals dismissed, and then Mika's mother and stepfather, who fundraised to travel to Ottawa for Monday's hearing, to in the courtroom. So Kyla Woodhouse would say, "One of the biggest things I have ever heard in my life were those two words. Have just made everything for us." Also on Monday, more than 24 members of the Ottawa-Montreal chapters of Bikes Against Children Abuse, also known as the BACA, showed up in support of Woodhouse, and they all interrupted in cheers for Woodhouse, who are members of the Calgary chapter, walked out of the courtroom. When Brian Woodhouse was asked and his wife about their final decision and how they were feeling, Brian would say, "Vindicted. It's finally over." So Jordan and Magoon, who was Mika's stepmother, was originally convicted of second-degree murder, but the convictions were attempted to be elevated to first-degree murder by the Alberta Court of Appeals in December 2016. The couple's lawyer did argue that the first convictions should be overturned because the Alberta's Courts of Appeals erred in evaluating the verdict. So he's trying to say that they, you know, fucked up pretty much. So in the early Crown victory, that's what we're going to talk about right now. So in his arguments, Miller asked if the first-degree murder conviction would be the result every time a child was fatally assaulted by a parent based on the nature of the relationship. "Maybe I don't see what's wrong with this actually," replied Justice Russell Brown. The full panel of Supreme Courts heard during the case in the courtroom as it was presented. That should be the right way. If you injure your child and it results in a fatal death, you should get the full extent of the law, no matter who you are. So Justice Russell Brown is right for saying, what's wrong with that? That's how all laws should be. So the prosecutor had an early victory at Canada's top court after a brief submission from all the parties. The judges granted the Crown's motion to strike much of what can be argued. But the only issue was Magoon and Jordan's lawyer were then permitted to address whether the Alberta Court of Appeals inappropriately substituted a verdict of first-degree murder following a conviction of second-degree murder at the trial. The defense lawyer had wanted to argue for manslaughter conviction and a new trial or an outright acquittal for Magoon, but did not happen because they were both charged with first-degree murder. A judge would find that the couple was guilty. So in the documents of the court, it says, "In an act of unimaginable cruelty, Magoon physically restrained a 6-year-old Mika Jordan and held her hands over an open flame while Mika screamed and kicked and eventually urinated. The document also says this burned signaled the start of Mika's confinement by the caregivers. In the days that followed, Mika was kept from her mother and subjected to repeated acts of domination enforced by violence. These acts accumulated in her murder. So the Calgary Police Service actually sent homicide detective Mike Cavilla, who led the initial investigation, to Ottawa to be there in court for this trial. So in an interview with the CBC News Monday afternoon, Inspector Paul Wazane said that the service is pleased with the Supreme Court's decision, which validates all of the work that went into the investigation. Wazani said both CPS and the Crown's office put hundreds and hundreds of hours into this case, despite the recent nature of the decision. Paul said today's decision does not change the way police and prosecutors will lay charges. He quotes, "It makes no difference to us, whether it's family members involved, neighbors, a stranger, that means nothing to us. What matters to us is to find the truth of what happened in an event of a murder in this particular case, and bring those people to justice." So defense lawyer Bates and Nicole Radosh were the ones who represented Magoon, and Brandon Miller and Janice Patel were the ones who appeared for Jordan in court. The panel who presided on the case says they will release its reasons in the upcoming months. A first-degree murder conviction carries out an automatic life sentence with no chance of parole for 25 years. So let's get into Jordan and Magoon's reactions to their charges. They actually were not happy when they were found in the lesser charge of second-degree murder. Instead, they wanted their convictions overturned and their sentences reduced. And that was when the prosecutor started fighting and upholding their conviction to upgrade to first-degree murder, which in the end was the result of first-degree murder. And it took more than 5 years after Mika's death for the Alberta Court of Appeals to actually hand down the ruling. But thank God those two bastards got what they deserved. So in a quote from Brian Woodhouse, he would say the judge pointed out what each was responsible for. It was nice to hear the words being said that it's what you did. I find you responsible. So even despite Jordan and Magoon's unhappiness for their lesser conviction and being found guilty, in the end, their first-degree murder charge was laid and they got what they fucking deserved. Also, during the trial, Brian Woodhouse would yell out, "Child murderers!" He also added, "Ultimately guilty. As guilty, they lose a few hours of their lives. We lost her!" Kayla Woodhouse would say, "The Canadian justice system did us proud today and delivers justice for Mika." She said, and Brian, as they're still emotional, "It's nice to know what we have been through for the last 6 years has not been in vain." So when the lawyers of Jordan and Magoon arrived at the Alberta's Court of Appeals, they actually argued that Mika's death had been confined prior to her death in a stipulation, which automatically upgrades the severity of murder case from second degree to first degree. But instead, they argued that the couple should have had their sentences reduced to manslaughter. Brian Mills, the representative of Jordan, also told the Post Media that not returning the child to a parent under custody agreement does not amount to unlawful confinement and should be considered an abduction in contravention of a custody order. So he's pretty much saying, "I want to be charged with abduction and not confinement." It's totally two different things. Two different things, buddy. You have to go and abduct a child from a place when you do not have the child in your possession. If the child is in your possession and you're withholding her from her mother, you are confining a child, sir. Confining a child. Like, oh, these people, I told you, it's not going to get any easier. It's just going to keep getting hard. So anyways, which automatically upgrades to the severity of murder case. Sorry, I lost my pace here. So the Supreme Court had made it clear that the offense is committed against the mother, he said. No, it's committed against you. But the Crown prosecutor, Susan Pepper, would go on to say, "It doesn't matter that it cannot be said which blow or blows were the fatal blows and who delivered them. It is sufficient that each Miss Magoon and Mr. Jordan delivered a blow that was capable of being fatal, of being the fatal blow, or one of the fatal blows according to the medical evidence. Magoon and Jordan Both did confess in a great detail to the various assaults in an 8-month Mr. Big operation that accumulated in their arrests. Pepper says she and a co-prosecutor, Hayet Macrabe, I'm going to say that wrong, I'm sorry, will be seeking the higher end of the parole ineligibility close to 25 years for both killers. Because of this heinous nature of their acts, Chelsea quotes, often in domestic homicides where children are victims, we don't know what happened to the child. Pepper said outside the courtroom because the undercover operation, we found out what happened to Mika. So because of the operation, they were able to find out what exactly happened and got the truth about it. Without that operation, they probably never would have found out what happened. So on the medical evidence and the facts as I have found, the actions of either Mr. Jordan and Miss Magoon could have caused the fatal blow, or it may have confined more than one blow, Rosemary Nation said. And she was the Court of Queen's Bench Justice who actually delivered the verdict. She also says, although the couple clearly overstepped any authority they have to disclaim Mika, she did not find that her mere presence in the house at the times the assault occurred. Rosemary Nation also says that even with an express common intention, because their actions were direct to the same victim, the co-accused and co-participants, she says the couple had the necessary intention and directly participated in the assault that led to Mika's death, and that is sufficient to find causation. During the trial, the defense lawyers, who had argued for manslaughter and now will seek a parole ineligibility closer to the lower of 10 years. So they also was granted a psychological report for Miss Magoon, and the psychiatric evaluation will show certain factors of my client's upbringing that have contributed to her being in the situation. They said suffice to say that she had a very tough upbringing, he had said to the Crown. Now, see, the Crown was very disappointed. It wasn't for first-degree murder, or it wasn't for second-degree murder, and he was very disappointed in the conviction, and he added, how could anyone be happy in the process? Lawyer Mitch Stephenson, who represented Jordan, did not make any comments following the verdict. The judge adjourned the case to return in court on August 28th to ensure the reports are prepared for the victims' impact statements and sentencing on September 18th. So, which is where Justice Rosemary Nation had sentenced Marie Magoon and Spencer Jordan to life in prison with no chance of parole for 17 years and conviction to death of Spencer's daughter, Mika Jordan. Mika died in November 2011, a day after she was taken to Alberta's Children's Hospital, suffered severe injuries, and that would be sentencing by Court of Queen Benches Justice Rosemary Nation. But in the end, the Supreme Court would uphold the first-degree murder convictions for the killers, Magoon and Jordan, under the original second-degree murder conviction for Jordan and Magoon, and the couple has now been sentenced to life in prison without parole with a minimum of 17 years. With the first-degree murder convictions upheld, neither will be able to apply for parole for 25 years now. So despite the decision, would have said it will never fully amount to the closure in the horrific death of the beloved child, but it does allow them to focus on their families and hopefully help them in similar situations. So even though after two people beating a six-year-old child, it took nearly a year to actually arrest them, and then they got charged for second-degree murder. Then they had to fight just to have them convicted for first-degree murder. Even though it is clear they have abused and beaten this poor child, they murdered her. They burned her palms with lighters, for God's sakes. Like, I don't understand how it took this long. But I understand they didn't have circumstantial evidence, so I get that part. But still, I wish these bastards got caught sooner. So, I personally think 25 years of no parole is long enough. I think they should get longer, but that's just me, and I don't think they should even have a chance of parole. But I want to hear what you guys think. I want you guys to message me and let me know. Do you guys think they got what they deserved? Do you think their punishment should have been harsher? Because I do. I do not think that they got what they deserve. So anyways, I just want to let you guys know that I knew this case had a lot of ups and downs, and it was a child murder case, and there was a lot of twists and turns, and about halfway through, all of their news reports and everything I was reading, everything was so different in every site, it was hard to actually get a right track of what actually happened, because every page I found started with the Supreme Court's ruling and then backtracked to when it happened. So I had to start at the bottom and work my way through the top for all of my sites. So it took me quite a while to get it. So I hope it wasn't too confuckery for ya. Sorry, that's, I don't know what else to say. But anyways, I hope you guys enjoyed everything. But still, I really want to know what you guys think of the verdicts. And please watch the videos if you can and let me know like what your thoughts and takes are on it. If you want to. But anyways, thank you so much, everybody, for listening to my podcast. I know this was a wild and heartbreaking one, and I feel bad for all the parents out there and children. And Mika Jordan, I hope you rest in peace, honey. And this episode is dedicated to Mika Jordan and her mother and her stepfather, Kyla and Brian Woodhouse, and to all of the bikers that showed up to the trial. I really appreciate all that support, and this was a very heartfelt case, and I hope that there is some rest and peace for everybody that was involved in this case. But that's really all I have for you guys today. So, like I always say, thanks for creeping it real. So I'm your host, Shanice. Thank you to all my new followers and all my new downloaders. I am so happy to get my podcast out there. We're spreading around the world. We already got some listeners in the U.S., Russia, Germany, and in China. So thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate everything. If you'd like to message me, go on to my Facebook page, Creepaholics, or you can email me at creepaholicsvsshanice@gmail.com. Or if you just want to go to my Patreon page and send on some general support, check out the cool tiers and prizes we have coming up. That would be great, too. Thank you, everybody, and I hope you have a wonderful and safe evening.
Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.